Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science, interviews, and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, astronomical white holes, recycled wastewater, bugs on windshields, and whether cell phones kill bees. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Beehives, each beehive is very different in its characteristics from the next beehive. You need a large sample size to statistically detect differences.
That was bee expert May Birenbaum on whether cell phones kill bees. More with her later, but first, the Global Night Sky with Deborah Bird. Here you now to talk about what astronomers call white holes. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Jorge.
So, Deborah, I've heard of a black hole. What is a white hole?
Well, first let me say that a white hole for the past several decades has been a totally theoretical object. No object in space has ever been found that people have conclusively said this is a white hole. And in fact, people have been believing for the past several decades that white holes don't exist. They are pretty much just the opposite of a black hole. A black hole is a large amount of mass in a very small space, creating very powerful gravity. There are a number of places in the universe now where we think black holes exist. For example, the center of our own Milky Way galaxy.
Right, and that black hole sucks in light.
That's right. A white hole does just the opposite. A white hole is a place that would be radiating light, radiating a powerful amount of light. And again, scientists don't believe anymore, or they haven't believed for the past several decades, that white holes can exist. They do show up in the mathematics for relativity theory, but there are, as soon as you introduce a little bit of mass into the vicinity of a white hole, it causes an instability and causes the white hole to disappear. So how can the white hole be radiating light and mass if mass causes it to disappear? That's an inconsistency that even astronomers didn't want to deal with. So there hasn't been much talk about white holes in the past few decades.
So there's news about white holes, though.
That's right. Two Israeli astronomers, Alon Redder and Shlomo Heller, released a paper suggesting that a known gamma ray burst, they call this gamma ray burst GRB060614, might actually have been a white hole.
And what exactly is a gamma ray burst?
Well, gamma ray bursts are these very cool objects that have been discovered in recent years. They're thought to be the most powerful explosions in our universe, and we don't know exactly what they are, but astronomers tend to associate them with either supernovae explosions or with star formation. And that's why this particular object, GRB060614, is so interesting. It's not associated with a supernova. It's not associated with star formation.
Deborah, why do these astronomers think they might be seeing a white hole?
Well, it's really an interesting kind of a thought experiment. They associate white holes with yet another astronomical construct, and that is the Big Bang, thought to have created our universe. And one of the things that they say is that the Big Bang was instantaneous rather than continuous or long-lasting, and that's how they're getting around this problem of the white hole instability, where as soon as they form, white holes cease to exist. The Big Bang only happened in an instant, so it didn't exist for very long. So maybe the Big Bang itself was a white hole. They go on to say that maybe there are small bangs that occur in the universe, and they're thinking that GRB060614 might have been one of these small bangs. And again, that object is a gamma ray burst. It's a very powerful burst. It's not associated with supernovae or star formation, as most gamma ray bursts are. Its burst lasted a long time for a gamma ray burst, 102 seconds, which for a gamma ray burst is a long time. So these astronomers are suggesting that maybe this gamma ray burst in the distant universe is a sign that white holes do exist.
So there's a gamma ray burst. It's extremely powerful, and astronomers think it might be a white hole.
That's right. And again, a white hole is just the opposite of a black hole. It's the theoretical opposite. Whereas black holes with their powerful gravity draw things in, a white hole would be an explosive burst of radiation. So you can see how the gamma ray burst idea and the white hole idea may go hand in hand.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Love to hear from you on Facebook. Tell us where you're from. You can find us as Earth Sky. Ryan Britton has a story of weird science on the scientific value of bugs getting smashed by speeding cars.
Right.
Welcome, Ryan.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, there's actually value in it. There's a biologist in the Netherlands, and he is asking his fellow countrymen to count the number of bugs that they have killed with the front license plate of their car, all in the name of scientific research.
So, Ryan, did the scientists ask people to get down on their knees on all fours and count the bugs squished against the front license plate?
That's right. That's right. And he wants them to record how many miles they drove to get the bugs smushed against the plate, as well as when and where they drove. The study is being conducted by a scientist named Dr. Van Vliet. And the purpose here is to find out the density of bugs throughout the different geographic regions of the Netherlands, and to see how this density might possibly change as the weather or the climate changes. So he wants people to count bugs on their front plates for a while. But there's a certain elegance to this study. As Van says, all the license plates within the Netherlands are the same size. So we basically have some 7 million perfect sensors driving all around the country at different times during the day. This has the capacity to actually be pretty scientific and empirical.
And to know the bugs were here.
That's right, and where they might be headed along with other animals that eat them, at least in the Netherlands.
Interesting and gruesome.
Right, right, and that reminds me of a joke. Do you know the last thing that goes through a bug's mind as it gets smushed by a car?
No.
Its abdomen. Now, that's actually an old joke.
And so ends our segment of Weird Science. Ryan, where can people find out more of this bug smushing study?
Well, the site where people in the Netherlands can upload the number of smushed bugs that they've counted is at splashteller.nl. And you can also find stories about the study at treehugger.com and expatica.com.
Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Earth Sky's Ryan Britton. We're Earth Sky, heard on 1,200 stations around the world, including Voice of America. Sky heard on 1,200 stations around the world, including Voice of America. Beth Lebwohl joins us now to talk about her interview with water expert Susan Leal, who wrote a book called Running Out of Water. Welcome, Beth.
Hey, thanks, Jorge. So Ms. Leal said a couple of things to me. First, she spoke about how the globe is really facing increasing water scarcity. But she said we don't have to run out of water if we use it smartly and sustainably. And she said that there are actually a number of common sense solutions that she researched from her book, meaning proven solutions that actually save water. And this is not, like turning off your faucet while you're brushing your teeth. These are things that can happen on a much larger scale, really on a municipal or industrial agricultural scale. So the first example she gave was of, I would say, an innovation that cropped up in California in the 1990s. Orange County at the time was getting the vast majority of its water pumped in from the northern part of the state, which is water rich, and Southern California, where Orange County is located, is water poor. And Orange County officials realized, this isn't sustainable. We better come up with a plan. And so they did. The plan they came up with was to recycle their wastewater. And Ms. Leal explains.
They realized they could not rely on water from the north. So what they decided to do was recycle their own wastewater. And it was considered very cutting edge, very progressive, and it is proven to be a wonderful boon for the county. It is not as in dire straits as some of its surrounding counties, because there are frequent droughts, particularly in Southern California. The effects of the drought are felt quite severely. And they were protected from that. And what they in recycling their own wastewater, and we're not talking about gray water, we're talking about they took water from their sewer plants, took them through a very intricate treatment system so that the water that they produced was of a pristine level, it was like distilled water. And then they put it back into their underground or underground reservoirs or groundwater system, and then treated it like the other waters that were coming from other systems, and it became potable water. It was a very cutting-edge stuff. What they did in Orange County has been replicated also in Singapore. And then some of the other counties started to see the wisdom of what Orange County did.
Susan Leal just spoke of how not only Orange County, but other cities have come to recycle wastewater.
She also talked in another part of our discussion about how there are some common sense solutions to saving water in the fields, in agriculture. And here she discusses another California county, Imperial County.
It's a very interesting county in that it was once a desert. And in the early 1900s, it was accidentally flooded. And it became one of the large agricultural valleys of the United States and actually of the world. In fact, about a half of the winter vegetables of the United States come from this county. And what they found is that with some fairly low-cost technology put in place, they could reduce the use of water so that they could easily grow with 10% less water. And that may not mean a lot, but if you're talking about 10% less water, it may mean the difference between having food for another 3 decades or having food for 1 decade.
So Beth, what would you say is the most important thing that people should know about recycling water?
Bottom line, there is enough water for us if we treat it right.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl with her interview with Susan Leal, author of the book called Running Out of Water. Do cell phones kill honeybees? Renowned entomologist May Barenbaum of the University of Chicago is here on the phone to respond to media claims of whether cell phones kill bees, and she has an update on the status of bees today. Now, it's been a few years since we last spoke when we interviewed you on the collapse of colonies of honeybees back in 2006. Would you please give us an update on the state of bees today?
Over the last couple of years, there was a steady 30-plus percent loss, but this most recent survey actually revealed an increase in colony numbers, which is the first good news since that those disturbing indications began to come in late 2006.
Could you tell us a little bit more about this good news on honeybees? Now, this is for the United States, is that right?
Right. Actually, good point. Around the world, there are more disturbing reports coming in from various and sundry places. But at least in the U.S., it appears that some of the actions that beekeepers have taken, even in the absence of a known single cause for colony collapse disorder, appear to have ameliorated some of the losses.
Would you maybe tell us what are some of the, or go more into some of the reasons why honeybees are on the rebound right now?
Well, the reason I think that the industry is doing so much better is that as a consequence of this mysterious and very disturbing phenomenon called colony collapse disorder, there was an immediate increase in research into what potential causes might be, which resulted in an amazing increase in the basic knowledge of bee biology with respect to management, how people keep bees. So among the hypotheses that were investigated, people were concerned that poor nutrition might be a factor. It doesn't appear to be a factor, but at least now beekeepers are paying more attention to nutritional needs of bees. So the general level of awareness was raised, and as a consequence, even though a precise cause hasn't been identified, bees are a lot better off than they were 3 years ago.
I guess this gets to my next question, and this is a question from Twitter. What can the average person do to help honeybees?
Well, there are lots of ways, actually, to help honeybees. This is maybe an environmental crisis that isn't overwhelming, that really does have possible solutions. Among other things, be a little more tolerant of what might be considered weeds, because what one person might consider a weed, a pollinator may consider a meal. The American mindset that lawns have to be sterile monocultures of Kentucky bluegrass does the pollinators no good, nor does an agricultural landscape that is weed-free. Locally, one thing you can do to support bees is to support local beekeepers and buy local honey. Among other things, a major problem in the honey industry is what's called honey laundering. This is this practice of transshipping honey that ultimately comes from China that is relabeled and shipped from elsewhere, which is full of adulterants and contaminants, including high fructose corn syrup, among other things. So buying from a local beekeeper guarantees that there will be local bees. And in addition, you get the wonderful bonus of having this marvelous sweetener that is infinitely variable and absolutely delicious.
I'd like to switch to something, the news reports of something else that may be killing bees, and that is cell phones. There have been reports in May of 2011. In essence, cell phones are killing bees. Do cell phones kill bees?
Well, that is an enormous leap from the data presented in this paper. What the study basically examined the effect of cell phones inside the hive on a particular bee behavior, which is called piping. There are a few problems with the paper that just came out in the journal Apidology. And that's that the cell phones were placed inside the hives, which, of course, as the authors freely admit, does not really replicate reality, which I think they even use the term real life. Moreover, it's difficult to interpret what the piping actually means. There was no bee death in these papers, nothing at all, just piping, a sound. They made a sound. And there was no swarming. One of the reasons bees pipe is to signal their nestmates to begin swarming, but under no circumstances in this study did anyone actually leave the colony. And then finally, it may not have been the cell phones, but the programming. When, if you read the experimental methods, they actually, in order to keep the cell phones active, they were playing a French radio station. Maybe the bees just didn't like the station. You know, there are other ways to interpret these data. And in fact, there are no statistical analyses presented. So it's very hard to go from the data that are presented, which are a few indications that in fact bees do make a noise when a cell phone is activated inside their colony, all the way to cell phones are killing bees. I mean, it's just not a tenable connection.
You've been listening to May Birenbaum, professor and head of the Department of Entomology at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. That's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers, Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Our audio engineer is Eddie Campos. And special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Okote Soul Sounds, Quiet Company, 100 Flowers, and the Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists with too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage.